Dear friends, we extend you a warm welcome to this evening's talk on the subject Brahmacharya, the law of consciousness. Brahmacharya is a very familiar term to Indians. It is part of an ancient tradition. It is a term which has come from part of a very ancient tradition. But like every other ancient thought, this too is misconceived, misinterpreted, misapplied. The ordinary meaning attached to the word Brahmacharya is celibacy. And it is also mistaken to be monasticism. One who enters a monastic life is supposed to be following the path of Brahmacharya. All this are rooted in misconception, because the right philosophy of what man is and his purpose is not known. That knowledge is lost in India, in the world, but in India it is lost. The true meaning of the word, however, can be discerned by the very etymology of the term. Brahma Charya. Charya denotes movement. Brahma is an expression for the one who walks in the path of the Supreme Soul is a Brahmachari. He is following the path of Brahmacharya. One who abides by the laws of the higher life is the one who is following Brahmacharya. Now, we cannot understand and appreciate the profound law of continence if we do not, first of all, understand what man actually is and what's his purpose in life. The key to theosophy, that admirable theosophical book on practical theosophy, how to apply theosophy in life, says a very pregnant sentence, which in fact this axiomatic sentence sums up the whole of the philosophy of what man is and his relation to us. The axiom says, humanity is an emanation from divinity and on the return path thereto. So it means that we are not physical creatures, we are spiritual beings involved in the mundane existence, they have taken up the body, as very beautifully put in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It is even a portion of the Supreme which, having assumed life in this world of conditioned existence, draw together the mind and the senses so that to obtain a body and may live it again. So this, if we meditate on this axiom, it gives us some clue as to our true nature and self, presiding over the sense of touch, the sight, the hearing, taste, and mind and thought. It experiences the world. So this is our instrument, the body and the senses and the faculty, instrument of the real man, who is other than the embodiment, other than the world that he perceives, nature that he experiences through the faculties of his faculties, his senses and organs. So he is a spiritual being. That must be very clearly understood. It is a spiritual being has descended into matter and has met the rising animal. So man is animal, has animal nature in his embodied existence. He has descended from above and met the animal, and his mission is to raise up the animal. But in the process of descent into the matter, he loses his touch with his original self and nature. So he becomes deluded. He takes what is not self to be the self. He mistakes the evil to be good. He mistakes what is light to be darkness, and you know, this misconception of duty to responsibilities come, and he produces karma and becomes bound by them and goes from one experience to another experience, led by the law of cause and effect, a perfect law of justice. So entanglement in conditioned existence. But it is his mission to disentangle himself from matter, discern his true real self and nature and mission and purpose, and bring that higher perception to bear upon his life on earth and transform his whole nature and raise it up. This is the purpose for which we are all here. We may take some illustrations to point a little more clear to us. Jesus speaks of this in his parable of the prodigal son. We are all prodigal sons. The parable of the prodigal son is a prince who is heir to the throne of his divine parents and the vast kingdom over which he is destined to rule. He strays from his kingdom and stays far and takes shelter in pigsty, in the cow shed, in the horse stable, and thinks that's his home. But one day he realizes, look, this is not my real home. My real home and my mission is not this, to take care of the sheep, the pig and the cow and the horse. My mission, I'm of a different being altogether. And he retraces his steps, goes back to his kingdom, welcomed by his parents, and assumes his rightful place of sovereignty. We are all like prodigal sons. And then there is another very nice story in the Upanishads. I forget which Upanishad it is, probably Chandogya. It is said that, to illustrate this point, the teacher says, there is a man who is blindfolded, wandering in the desert. When you are blindfolded, you cannot see your way. You are going round and round in the hot sun, thirsty, hungry, and you do not know what your destiny is. And someone who knows comes to him, my dear friend, I'll show you the way. And he opens the cloth tied round eyes and asks him to see. You see now? Now, you see, go in this direction, and in this direction will be your true home, your destiny. And then someone will guide you from there. And then he proceeds in the direction shown by him, the one who knows and who helped him. And on the way, he meets several others and who show him the way. And finally, he reaches his destination. There's still another very beautiful verse in the Kathopanishad, very profound. It says, I do not know the exact, I cannot remember the exact verse, but it says to the effect that the self-being, self-existing being, now look at this word, self-existing being. Our true self and nature is never born, it never dies. Self-existing, existing, exists by itself, eternal. This self-existing being pierced opening outwards. Therefore, all creatures look outwards through their senses and organs. They do not look inward. But a few, very few wise men look inward and then claim their original place from where they came out and into this embodied existence, and retrace their steps and realize their true self. So this is, this outward looking tendency is called pravritti, outgoing tendency. We all have this outgoing tendency. We are caught up in this net of desire, mistaking what is not true to be true, what is not self to be self, and trying to recover what we have lost in things external, and meeting disappointment after disappointment after disappointment, and going, turning without cessation life. But the wise man, the very experiences in life show us that no pleasures, no happiness that you can conceive of in the world can never give you the true satisfaction and true happiness, because you are seeking something outside which can only be found in your true nature and self. So life is teaching this lesson to us, divine discontent. And one day or the other, all of us will turn back and seek our true home, our true self, our true knowledge, true happiness, our true goal for which we all have come down. So there are two paths. One is outgoing tendency, you know, rajasic. And other is inward looking, which is sattvic. And in the second chapter, Krishna says this rajasic nature, full of lust, anger, covetousness, it is the enemy of man. Even the wise man is shaken by it, is misled by it. It is very difficult to conquer, and this has to be conquered. So, the teaching is, now we have to deal with this illusion of separateness, our personal idea that we are a separate self. Our true self is the self of all. If self is eternal, if the self is without beginning, without end, it is eternal. That can be easily ascertained by every one of us. Change cannot perceive change, only changeless can perceive change. We are perceiver, changeless perceiver of innumerable changes, we witnesses. If the witness is deathless and birthless, he had to be eternal. How many eternals are there? There can be only one eternal. The true self is the self of all. So, the one self has become the many. So it is only our ignorant mind and our lower sense perception make us feel different from others. Inwardly, in truth, we are bound up with all. Every creature, every being is our own self. Every defect and weakness in the world is our own defect and weakness. And every effort that we make to improve ourselves, we help the world to improve itself and raise it up. Every time we degrade ourselves and neglect our duty, we cause the progress of the world to a higher life to be caused an obstruction for which we have to answer. So enormous responsibility lies on us. So our whole mission is to raise the self, though we have descended into matter, that spark of divinity is there in man. It shines in his heart. And with that spark of divinity, we have to raise the animal self to human self and human self to divinity. This is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Uddharet Atmana Atmanam. And this is a continuous process. This is the law of life. And if you don't raise the self by the self, then man becomes his own enemy, as Buddha said in the Dhammapada. In the canto on evil conduct, he says, man should constantly strive to follow the path of good or the path of virtue. And if he neglects to do that, his mind will incline to evil, because we are rooted in animal nature. We can easily be misled by animal nature. Lusts, anger, covetousness, greed, hatred, revenge, jealousy, destroyers of man, destroyers of peace. And they are the formidable obstacles on our path of life. So if we neglect to raise the self by the self, our mind inclines to evil and we to go down continuously. There are only two paths before us in every event, at every step. Either follow the path of vice or follow the path of virtue. It becomes very convenient for us to follow the path of vice. It requires moral and mental effort to follow the path of good. So we compromise and come to grief. This is the problem with us. So we have to raise the self by a knowledge of what is the true self. You know, in our declaration, it says, what is the purpose of this institution, of this study, of the United Lodge of Theosophists? It is to arrive at knowledge of the self and profound conviction of universal brotherhood. This is the path. And once you have a correct comprehension of the true nature of the self and a conviction of universal brotherhood, irrespective of caste or creed or color or religion, then that power, the divine power that is in you, subdues the mind itself. And with that discriminative knowledge and power of your higher being, you are able to control and master the lower animal and raise it up. There is no way by which you can raise it up by any other means. So, conqueror of the world is a conqueror of the self. To conquer the world is very easy compared to conquest of oneself. So difficult it is. Yet, that is a task that we have to accomplish, and we are here for that purpose. So, I will come to that after the... Now, there is a very important verse which Sanat Sujatiya in the Mahabharata says. Sanat Sujata telling Dhritarashtra on these very important subjects. Mistaking what is not self to be self and mistaking your personality which sees differences to be the self, what sin such a man will not commit? Kim tena kritam papam. So, he is called Chora Atma Apaharina. That is one, we have lost touch with ourselves. Atma Apaharina. What sin we did not commit because of delusion? And then, Keno Upanishad very beautifully puts it that if you know it here and now, reality is there. Satyamasti. If it is not known here and now, lost. Great is the loss. Mahiti vidashtihi. Great is the loss if you don't follow this path of virtue. Mind you, every great teacher, every sacred scripture teaches this. Our Muslim friend is here. We study the Holy Quran in the light of theosophy. The whole burden of the song of the Holy Quran is this: keep yourself in the influence of divinity and surrender to the divinity. If you don't, a very severe warning is given there by the Prophet. You'll become the, you'll be consumed in fire. You know that meaning of that profound statement of consumption, consuming in fire, is something that we have to think over. Theosophy throws light on that. So then, following this path of virtue, of following the path of higher life, is called brahmacharya. Atmavasam brahmacharyam. Atmavasam, dwelling on the self. Which self? Eternal self. Is brahmacharya. Law of continence. Now, it is a law of higher life. So, the great sages have taught right from time immemorial what are the laws of virtue. It is not that only sages and great yogis have to follow it. Every man and woman who is innately divine is incumbent upon him or her to follow the path of virtue. This five rules have been very concisely given in the Yoga Aphorisms of Patanjali. There are 10 disciplines. 10 disciplines. spiritual disciplines, moral disciplines, which is incumbent upon every man. Universal, supreme, universal duties. Bhauma Mahavrataha, he says. What are they? He says, first is non-violence. Ahimsa. Ahimsa doesn't mean only not killing animals or other forms of life. Killing other forms of life becomes inevitable. Yeah, I am used to, right from childhood and in my culture, to eat non-vegetarian food. Nothing wrong. You have to, may I have to kill to, you know, if your whole system has become, we were studying the other day about what true theosophic diet is. If you are vegetarian, well and good. If your system whole is attuned to the meat diet, no problem at all. That is not important. So go ahead and eat meat. What is there? Nothing wrong. And you may have to kill. You kill only for your living. You have a duty to perform. That is not a big thing at all. That is not true ahimsa. The terrible thing about ahimsa is what Jesus said. No, teaching us the law of continence. He says it's not what goes into your mouth, vegetarian food or non-vegetarian food or whatever, but what comes out of it. Fornication, theft, lies. These defiles the man, not what you eat. If vegetarian diet were to make us all gods and spiritual, then sheep, goat and cows should have been spiritual, elephant. That is not important. So, five duties are to be performed. First is non-violence. Non-violence is your mind and heart. That's where your violence is conceived. Hatred, anger, revenge, jealousy, vanity. These are, you know, our whole blood is full of violence. A person may look very peaceful outwardly, but what about his inner nature? To the inner eye, that keeps on coming in the Quran. God knows what is in the deepest depths of your heart. That eye can never be deceived. It knows what is your true heart, true mind. See, if non-violence is fully realized by us, then the whole nature becomes friendly to you. Animals will not hurt you. You know why animals hurt us in the wild? Because they sense the violence in us. And out of fear and self-defense attack. How many innumerable instances are there in ancient Indian tradition that those great sages and saints who have conquered their lower passions and unfolded divinity in them, who are the very epitome of non-violence, the whole wilderness becomes friendly to them. Humanity, the nature will become friendly to whole humanity if this is realized. Non-violence is the first duty. Remove from our heart all passions of anger, of jealousy, hatred, revenge, defiles and destroys man and destroys society. Non-violence. And second, non-possession, aparigraha. What do we mean by non-possession? In the Ishavashya Upanishad, it is said, Ishavashya Midam Sarvam, all this is self, all this is God, all this is everywhere, everything is one. So renounce and then enjoy. Nothing is yours. Your own body is not yours. Your mind is not yours. Everything is, you're a trustee of it. You have to use it for the great purpose for which you have come here, for the humanity. And after performing this sacrificial action, then what comes to you? Enjoy. Magridaha kaschat svidhanam. Never take what is not yours. Non-possession. So non-possession is the attitude. That doesn't mean you sell your house, you sell your car and go and sit in a forest. That is not non-possession. A person may do that and yet he will be attached inwardly for all this. to be in the world and not be of it, to have the right attitude of discriminative, the sharp discrimination and the right attitude born of the discrimination, that we do not possess any of these things, we have to leave them in a good condition for benefit of our fellow men and use them for the benefit of our fellow men. That is the reason why yesterday we were hearing Immanuel Kant. This is the ethic of Immanuel Kant. He said mandatory, what's that word?
Categorical imperative.
That is, you do your duty because it is to be done for the benefit of others, not for your own benefit. Renounce all self-interest in them, non-possession. And then non-theft. Never take what is not yours. Never touch even, not even think of what is not yours. If non-possession becomes, the ethic of non-possession has been cultivated to the highest extent, the yogi has the power of getting whatever he wants from the whole nature, the hidden treasures and so on. Because he becomes into possession because he possesses nothing personally. He is a benefactor of the world. So, non-theft. And then, it is satya. Never tell a lie. Even if it is, you have to meet with disadvantage. You have to meet with troubles. Never tell a lie. Stick to truth. Satyam vada. Always speak the truth. To save your skin, tell a lie, you have defiled yourself. And then comes brahmacharya, law of continence. What is brahmacharya? Again, following all these five rules is brahmacharya. Not any one of it and to the neglect of other. All the five had to be concurrently done. Now look at this, our Muslim friend here, that's why I'm saying this. Five, look at this five. There are five observances, five duties. In the Prophet has prescribed 5 days, five times prayer in a day. Number five is very important. Number five is full of significance. We who study the sacred doctrine know what profound significance. So continence then has two meanings. Generally it means restrain of your senses and mind, shama and dhamma. You cannot restrain your senses unless you restrain your mind and your thoughts. You know, all your actions, desires arise from the heart and the mind. And there you have to fight the battle. Through discrimination, through constant vigilance, awareness. So, generally, it means restraint of the senses and restraint of personality, selfishness, egotism, vanity. They have to be restrained. And specific meaning is especially lust. The sex drive is the most powerful drive in human life. And the abuse of it is the greatest sin and the source of the moral and spiritual degradation of man. And he becomes an heir to terrible diseases. Medical science may invent remedies, discoveries of marvelous medical discoveries, but then the moral cause is this. When we given ourselves to mere animal nature and use it for mere gratification, we are degrading ourselves. It is a divine gift, as in the previous, in the last Sunday, we had, we recounted this particular truth being taught in the book of Genesis. The war between the seed of the woman and the serpent. Symbolism again, we will not go into it, we try to explain it the previous Sunday. Serpent of wisdom. The woman is not the woman that we now. Woman represents matter, lust. given to lust, you injure the head of the spiritual wisdom and you lose that. And loss of spiritual wisdom is the greatest of loss. Nothing can be greater than that. There are centers in our brain. We use hardly 10% of our brain. Why the remaining 90% is not used? Because we don't know. There are spiritual centers in the brain. Our lower mind has nothing to do with it. There are seats in, there are sacred organs in the brain, which are seats of spiritual knowledge and spiritual wisdom. And heart is the place where the God dwells. Heart and the brain are sacred organs. And the spiritual part of the organ is directly connected through the spinal cord with your reproductive system. Abuse of it destroys them. The two things destroys and defiles man, makes them worse than an animal. Alcoholic beverages, liquor, and irresponsible use of sex destroys him. So, therefore, brahmacharya here, the law of continence, it does not mean that you don't have to live a householder's life. You don't have to live in a family and bring up children. It is not that at all. It is not monasticism. It is not celibacy. It is responsible use of this faculty. A very responsible use of this faculty. Whole animal world follows it. The law of continence, naturally. Only during the season of reproduction they come together. At other times, they are neutralized. They keep away. It is only given to bestial man to indulge in it day in and day out without any shame. And reduce himself below the level of the animal. In the far past, when man had not yet fully become embedded in matter, and the serpent had spoken in the ears of Adam and Eve, look, eat this fruit, your eyes will be opened. When eyes were opened to him, when he was wise, he knew this, he followed this law of continence. It is only later on when the other part of the serpent, you know, the lower serpent, the animal passions gain higher, you know, due to physical evolution became prominent, then he lost it. His divine wisdom was lost. And now, in the Bible it is said, you will bring forth children in pain and sorrow. Woman is never intended to bring forth children in pain and sorrow. It is due to the karma. So, even the savage tribe, look, Red Indians. Red Indians are, now of course they have completely lost now. When the first Europeans set their foot in America, the native Indians were already a degraded race of a high civilization of the past. Even they followed this law of continence naturally, instinctively. When the tribal woman became pregnant, she would become an object of sacred worship to her husband. That was the, it was natural for them. And it was followed ancient India. The sacredness of the householder's life was so sacrosanct that this law of continence was followed. So the husband and wife came together only for purpose of reproduction, and not at any other time. And today in civilized society, what has happened today? Birth control, use of contraceptives, abortion, and worse of all, sodomy. This is a terrible deviation from the law of continence, which destroys man utterly in the long run. And I will read a small portion on this. HPP article, the apotheosis of passion from the bitter fruit of which man has everlasting need to be redeemed is the surest sign of moral degradation. Liberty to love according to the impulse of the senses is the most profound slavery. From the beginning, nature has hedged that pathway with disease and death. Wretched are the countless marriages, vile as are man-made laws, which place marriage on a lower plane. The salvation of free love is a whisper of the snake anew in the ear of modern Eve. A powerful statement of HPB. Now, it is good that we learn all this. It is good that we learn the laws of higher life. Now, we are all children of our generation. We are all part of society, degraded as it is. Now, from this mire of sin and failing, we have to rise ourselves, make an effort, and follow the path of virtue, follow the path of continence. Now, one or two articles, again, a few passages, and with that we'll end the lecture and take up questions. Very important. She's speaking of Tolstoy, Count Tolstoy. He was, though a Christian, he was a true Christian. You know, you call yourself a Christian, but pay no heed to what Jesus says and follow the dictates of the church. Count Tolstoy was of another kind. He didn't care for the organized religion. He followed the true teachings of Jesus, the law of continence which Jesus taught, and implemented his life. And he brings out this perspective in his wonderful stories, Anna Karenina, and then another story, Death of Ivan Ilyich. He speaks of this law of continence, which is very ennobling and very inspiring. Now, this author tells us that far better no marriage at all than such desecration, what his church regards as one of the holy sacraments. Marriage is a holy sacrament, and life, the relationship between husband and wife is a holy sacrament, should never be desecrated. And then, it is not monasticism, but the law of continence, which most Christians are unable to perceive, that he preaches. Nothing can be more moral, more conducive to human happiness and perfectibility than the application of this law. It is one ordained by nature herself. Animals follow it instinctively, as do also the savage tribe. Once pregnant, to the last day of the nursing of her babe, that is for 18 or 20 months, the savage squaw is sacred to her husband. The civilized and semi-civilized man alone breaking this beneficent law. And then, marriage relations as at present practiced and of union performed on commercial basis, or what is worse, on mere sensual love. In contrast. Now, in that story, he brings up a conversation of one of the characters. He, in that Tolstoy conveys the greatest and holiest truths. I quote, "For morality to exist between men and women in their daily life, they must make perfect chastity their law. In progressing towards this end, man subdues himself. When he has arrived at the last degree of subjection, we shall have moral marriages. But if a man, as in our society, advances only towards physical love, even though he surrounds it with deception and with shallow formality of marriage, he obtains nothing but license to vice." And then come to very important point. It is not mere physical abstention. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna warns that he who restrains his organs and senses, but in his thoughts and mind dwells upon objects of sense, is a hypocrite. In fact, the prophet also warns of this hypocrisy. So Jesus teaches mental and moral chastity. And Jesus warns, if you look upon a woman with a lustful eye, with an impure heart, you have already committed adultery. So every woman has to be looked upon. We'll come to that later. In the light of theosophy, you will, if you have well grounded in theosophy of truths, your whole attitude changes. The way you look at women will undergo a sea change. You will not, never look upon on her with the eyes of lust. And then, it is not understood today, in the West especially, and unfortunately in India also, educated as we are and very proud of Western education, we don't understand even that. You speak of it in the mass media, they will ridicule you. They said, think what a perversity of ideas there must be when the happiest and the freest condition of human being, that of mental chastity, is looked upon as something miserable and ridiculous. The highest ideal, the most perfect condition to be attained by women, that of a pure being, a Vestal, a virgin, provokes in our society a fear and laughter. So, Tolstoy spoke of moral continence and chastity, and it is never monasticism. And HPB says she knew of many men and women who had children in family, but mentally and morally pure and virgin. It is not the physical act, it is your mind and imagination. Pollution of your heart and pollution of your mind, which Jesus said, what goes into your mouth doesn't pollute you. What comes out of it? Comes out of your heart and mind, which is full of pollution. So moral and mental chastity. So that immorality does not consist in physical act alone, but on the contrary, in liberating oneself from the moral obligation which such acts impose. Direct result of such is liberation from any moral obligation. The present marriage system, men steeped in corruption, seeking at the same time for a virgin woman, and he himself is impure. So that is a kind of desecration that has happened today. And it is given to very few earnest souls who have the interest of humanity and its progress on return path thereto, which has to be accomplished by self-effort. Aid this self-improvement, self-regeneration with a view to benefit the world. It is given to theosophists to do this. And we finally wind up with the profoundest of profound mysteries. With a short reading, we'll wind it up. It points to the last of the mysteries of cyclic transformations in the series, which mankind, having passed from the ethereal to the solid physical state, from the spiritual to physiological procreation, is now carried onward on the opposite arc of the cycle towards the second phase of its primeval state, when woman knew no man, and human progeny was created, not begotten. That was the condition ascended. We are going back to that condition. That state will return to it and to the world at large, when the latter shall discover and really appreciate the truths which underlie the vast problem of sex. It will be like the light that never shone on sea or land, and has to come to men through the Theosophical Society. That light will lead on and up to the true spiritual intuition. Then, as expressed one in a letter to a Theosophist, the world will have a race of Buddhas and Christs. For the world will have discovered that individuals have in their own power to procreate Buddha-like children or demons. When that knowledge comes, all dogmatic religions and with them the dogmas will die out. Now we'll stop here.